guidelines are out for the November 15 pilot face-to-face classes in some schools. Senator Ronald De La Rosa is the latest to come to the defense of the late dictator's son, fellow presidential candidate Ferdinand Marcos Jr. And later on in the program, we'll speak to political analyst Ramon Casiple on the possible alliance of presidential aspirant Vice President Lenny Robredo and progressive groups. And some employees in the Philippines could get a bigger than usual pay raise next year as the economy rebounds from the pandemic. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Topping the midday news, the guidelines for the November 15th dry run of the face-to-face classes in the Philippines now out. Under the Department of Education's memorandum, public and private schools participating in the program are required to conduct a self-assessment using the so-called school safety assessment tool. The DepEd also says the COVID-19 vaccinations of teachers and school personnel will be accelerated. 59 public and 20 private schools will participate in the first phase of this pilot run. Most of these schools are found in the provinces of Cebu, Masbate, Sarangani, and Zamboanga del Sur. The president of the Employers Confederation of the Philippines echoes the Labor Department's position. The alleged no vaccine, no salary scheme is illegal. Sergio Ortiz Luis Jr. says this practice by some employers should stop.
Even before the vaccine was introduced, we need the protocols, and we sure that those who come to work have no symptoms, that they are tested regularly, and again, the problem is right now it's illegal to discriminate against them. So we just have to live with the fact.
The Labor Department is already looking into the complaints first raised by the Trade Union Congress of the Philippines. Some senators were also alarmed by this scheme. Under COVID Alert Level 3, businesses such as restaurants, salons, gyms, and amusement halls are allowed to open, but only if all of their employees are fully inoculated. The COVID-19 situation in the Philippines continues to improve. The country recorded just over 6,900 new infections Monday. It's the second straight day that cases fell below 7,000. The health department says all island groups in the country now on a downward trend. Only Region 9 or the Zamboanga Peninsula remain under high risk, while the rest are either at moderate or low risk. Meanwhile, health facilities in the Cordillera Administrative Region and in Region 2 are still seeing high utilization rates.
Moderate risk yung kanilang case trends, pero mataas pa rin ang kanilang mga pagkaka-ospital. It might be na yung severe and critical nila, marami, o hindi kaya kailangan natin makita yung numero naman ng kanilang mga beds, kung bakit biglang kakaunti na yung kaso, mataas pa rin. Baka yung kanilang beds ay hindi rin ganun kadami, kaya mas mabilis nagka-catch up at tumataas ang kanilang healthcare utilization.
The intensive care unit at the Philippine General Hospital also remains full despite the decline in COVID-19 admissions. The ICU utilization rate in the whole of Metro Manila is now in the safe zone based on data from the DOH. While that's still not the case at the PGH, the hospital spokesperson says other segments of the hospital are becoming less busy.
Unfortunately, since our patients are quite sick, our ICUs remain to be full. We're 100% occupied. And most of the time, the moment there's an opening, a new patient has to be moved in. But the utilization rate for the whole COVID hospital now is down to 60%, which is pretty much in agreement to what's being seen in other hospitals. We do not have a long line anymore in our emergency rooms. And even if they go through our ERs, they are readily accepted in a matter of 1 to 2 days into our wards.
Some private hospitals in General Santos City on the verge of bankruptcy due to unpaid claims by state insurer PhilHealth. That's according to the president of the local chapter of the Private Hospitals Association of the Philippines. He says PhilHealth owes these hospitals as much as 834 million pesos, dating back to as early as the city's first COVID-19 case.
Sabi nila, they have paid 61% of it. All claims dito. Okay, so hindi na-isolate yung COVID cases. Ang nangyari, ang finding namin is ang record nila doesn't jive sa aming claims na wala sila, hindi nabayaran lahat. So we are giving them time to reconcile all the records up to October 31. Yung initial na proposal is, dahil hindi na maka-operate ang hospital, pababayaran na ang pasyente. And then sila na mag-claim ng PhilHealth. Ang masaklap noon is may mga idea na mag-disengage na ng PhilHealth, na we hope na hindi mangyari yan. Pero pag hindi mag-respond ang PhilHealth, hindi kami maka-operate. What else? Ano pang ibang gagawin namin?
Singapore further expands its no-quarantine rule for fully vaccinated travelers. Beginning today, Tuesday, 8 more countries, including Canada and the U.S., will be added to their so-called vaccinated travel lanes, or VTLs. South Korea will be placed on the list by November 15th. Under the policy, passengers won't have to undergo quarantine as long as they test negative before their departure and arrival. But only up to 3,000 will be allowed entry under the scheme. America's first Black Secretary of State Colin Powell is the latest high-profile individual to die due to complications from COVID-19. That's despite being fully inoculated. Let's take a look at some of the highs and lows of Powell's storied career.
Of Colin L. Powell as Secretary of State.
Colin Powell, the former top American general and first Black Secretary of State, died on Monday from COVID complications. In a statement posted to Facebook, his family said, quote, "We want to thank the medical staff at Walter Reed National Medical Center for their caring treatment. We've lost a remarkable and loving husband, father, grandfather, and a great American." Powell was one of the most notable Black figures in Washington for decades. A Vietnam vet, he rose to become an Army four-star general and chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under President George H.W. Bush during the 1991 Gulf War. In 1996, he considered running to become the first Black president, but was dissuaded by his wife, who worried for his safety. He later served as Secretary of State under George W. Bush. It was in that capacity that he famously stood before the United Nations and made the case to invade Iraq, based on the claims that Saddam Hussein was pursuing weapons of mass destruction. The evidence proved wrong. No weapons were found. Powell later admitted that his presentation was rife with inaccuracies provided by others in the administration. He called it a blot that would forever be a part of his record. Powell was known as a moderate Republican and a pragmatist. He broke with the GOP to endorse Barack Obama's candidacy and would criticize his party's shift toward anti-immigrant and isolationist policies. The Powell family says he was fully vaccinated against coronavirus. Colin Powell was 84 years old.
Former U.S. President George W. Bush mourns the passing of his Secretary of State, Colin Powell. In a statement, Bush called Powell a great public servant who was highly respected both at home and overseas. U.S. President Joe Biden says Powell will be remembered as one of the great Americans. America's first female Black Asian American Vice President Kamala Harris called Powell an inspiration to many.
Broke so many barriers, and those barriers were not easy to break by any stretch. But he did it with dignity, he did it with grace. And because of what he was able to accomplish, it really did elevate our nation in so many ways.
Other former and current U.S. Secretaries of State are also paying tribute to Powell. Hillary Clinton says she and her husband, former President Bill Clinton, will always be grateful they got to work and serve with Powell. As for incumbent Secretary of State Antony Blinken, he's hailing Powell's life as a victory of the American dream.
Today, a grateful nation observes the end of a distinguished career and celebrates 35 years of service and victory. A victory for the United States military that gave young Colin Powell a chance to learn and to grow and to lead. A victory for the military and political leaders who continue to elevate him based on their complete confidence and sheer respect. A victory for a nation well served. And in a larger sense, a victory for the American dream, for the principle that in our nation, people can rise as far as their talent, their capacities, their dreams, and their discipline will carry them.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, another 2022 candidate comes to the defense of the Marcoses. More on that when we come back. Stay with us. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The guidelines are out for the November 15 pilot face-to-face classes in some schools here in the country. Senator Ronald De La Rosa is the latest to come to the defense of the late dictator's son, fellow presidential candidate Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Some employees in the Philippines could get a bigger-than-usual pay raise next year as the economy rebounds from the pandemic. The official campaign period is still months away, but candidates in next year's elections are already making their presence felt, especially on social media. But the Philippine Commission on Elections admits its hands are tied when it comes to monitoring online campaigning. Let's hear more from Ina Reformina.
Tarpaulins and posters of aspiring candidates in the May 9, 2022 polls can be seen almost anywhere. Some have also taken to the airwaves. But the official campaign period for both national and local races will not start until February 8 for national and March 25 for local. Aspirants are also making use of social media in a bid to up their name recall. The Philippine Commission on Elections admits campaigning via social media was non-existent when the Omnibus Election Code was passed in 1985, which is why this mode is not regulated by the commission. COMELEC spokesman Director James Jimenez Bears, the poll body first sought the passage of an appropriate legislative measure by Congress in 2016.
Hindi natin pwedeng kontrolin yung dami ng nilalabas nilang material, no? Hindi ito katulad ng pagkokontrol o pagre-regulate ng COMELEC, halimbawa sa broadcast advertising. Kung saan ang mga kandidato ay meron limitadong dami ng minutong pwedeng ilabas na advertising. So kung pag-uusapan natin ay regulation of social media campaigning, kailangan muna natin first and foremost kailangan natin ng batas.
There is no such thing as premature campaigning. Prior to the start of the official campaign period, which is when aspirants become official candidates.
Wala pa namang campaign period, unang-una, pangalawa, wala pang official candidates, no? Medyo nakaka-frustrate din yan kasi kitang-kita mo naman kung minsan talagang mali na yung ginagawa pero technically speaking, hindi mo sila pwedeng masita.
In cooperation with major social media sites, the COMELEC will however monitor the social media ad spending of candidates to check whether these are later on declared in their Statement of Contributions and Expenditures or SOCE. In light of the COVID-19 pandemic, the Interior and Local Government Department reminds candidates to avoid staging super spreader events. The new normal campaign guidelines are still being finalized.
Ang paalala po ng DILG sa ating mga kumakandidato dito sa ating eleksyong 2022 ay dapat po maging ehemplo sila, no? Maging ehemplo sila ng ating mga kababayan dahil hindi pa rin po tapos ang pandemya. Since tayo po ay nakikipaglaban pa rin sa COVID-19, dapat po iwasan natin ang lahat ng mga super spreader events kahit saan man sa ating bansa.
Meanwhile, during the continuation of the Senate budget briefing on the poll body's 2022 budget, two election watchdogs expressed several concerns about poll preparations. AES Watch insisted the transmission of election results from the precincts and canvassing centers should be direct to the COMELEC central server instead of passing through the transparency server and other data centers. The group also opposes the setting up of a Meet Me room for telecom companies. Apart from the central server, the poll body will be putting up data centers in BGC Taguig, Quezon City, and Parañaque City. The poll body explained this was a recommendation from the COMELEC Advisory Council, which includes several government agencies and poll watchdogs NAMFREL and PPCRV.
The transmission should be direct to the central server, which is in Palacio del Gobernador. It should not be coming from any other locations. Kasi yung man in the middle, this is a very high risk if we're going to have these rocks outside the central server of COMELEC.
The number of registered voters as of September 30, 2021 is at 63.68 million, which includes some 6.1 million first-time voters. The figure is expected to hit 64 million when registration closes at month's end. Ina Reformina, ABS-CBN News.
Presidential aspirant Senator Ronald Bato de la Rosa says his fellow presidential candidate, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., should not be held accountable for the mistakes of his father. He believes the dictator's son does not have to apologize for what happened during martial law. De la Rosa, though, says the younger Marcos should acknowledge his father's mistakes.
Siguro, i-acknowledge niya kung merong mga yung kamalian na nagawa niya kayang tatay, but hindi siya mag-apologize for doon sa nagawa ng tatay niya dahil ang kasalanan ng anak, ang kasalanan ng tatay, hindi magkasalanan siguro ng anak. Tama naman, in-acknowledge man nila na they are willing to return all their the wealth that were classified as ill-gotten. Pero kung mag-sorry to apologize for the mistakes of his dad, kawawa naman.
Ha? Tanong ko, would you apologize for the mistakes of your dad?
Nag-apologize ako. Mag-apologize ako.
So ako, you believe
ako,
you should?
Ako, ako. Okay. Para sa akin, ha? Wala mang problema kung mag-apologize ako. Madali lang naman niyang gawin.
De La Rosa also denies there's an effort to revise history, particularly on what transpired during martial law. But he says the late dictator should be given credit for his accomplishments.
Ano po ba ang maling na ituro noon sa pananaw po ninyo?
Na si Pangulong Marcos ay napakawalang kwintang Pangulo. Ang ganda naman, ang dami naman ang nagawang maganda sa ating bansa. Before siya umalis, we are leading by all indicators dito sa Southeast Asia. Ang atin lang is yung totoo lang, yung fair tayo. Huwag lang yung puro kasamaan. 1986 pa yan, hindi pa pala tapos yan. Gaano ba kalaking ill-gotten wealth yan? Bakit hindi pa nabawalan yung years ba?
GG said.
Ganun pala, katagal. Akala ko tapos na yan eh.
Senatorial aspirant Samira Gutok reveals she confronted Action Democratico standard bearer Manila Mayor Isko Moreno following his tirades against Vice President Lenny Robredo. In an interview with Press One PH, Gutok said she felt disgusted when Moreno ranted about Robredo and criticized the 2019 senatorial ticket, Ocho Derecho, which she was part of.
How did I feel when... Yorma was doing the outstirades, kay VP. I'm melting behind him. And I wouldn't want to create a scene or scandal na alis ako sa likod niya. I wouldn't know what he's in his mind, eh. Bakit siya nagtirada? Or to the bordering on almost ano, below the belt na eh. So I felt very bad. Actually, I boycotted the one event niya. Hindi ako nagpakita. At alam niya yon. My absence in the party events or his events in the previous before Batangas showed na I was disgusted.
Despite what happened though, Gutok said she will stay with Moreno's senatorial slate. Former Philippine Senator Antonio Trillanes IV admits pushing for the exclusion of former party list lawmaker Nery Colmenares from the senatorial slate of presidential bet Vice President Lenny Robredo. His reason, Trillanes says Colmenares and his group, the Akbayan Bloc, are inclined to support a different presidential candidate.
The Makabayan Bloc has yet to openly support and endorse the candidacy of Vice President Lenny Robredo. And at the same time, we also know that the Makabayan Bloc in Sambayan has been maneuvering to push for Isko Moreno. We have the conveners of Sambayan as witnesses to that fact that none of their five conveners voted for VP Lenny, and they even tried to delay the announcement of Isambayan last September 30.
Trillanes also questioned the loyalty of the Makabayan Bloc, citing its supposed history of turning on its allies.
Hindi ito dinidivide yung opposition. Ano? Kasi nga sinasabi namin, as far as we are concerned, yung opposition solid yan eh. Ito naman mga ito, iba't ibang ilog ang namamangka ito eh. During the 2016 elections, Nery Colmenares was included in the slate of Senator Grace Poe. But then, based on our monitoring on the ground and eventually openly admitted by the Makabayan Bloc itself, that they campaigned and supported Duterte's candidacy in 2016. So you can see the duplicity and betrayal that these people are used to. So we cannot let VP Lenny experience that.
Colmenares has downplayed his spat with Trillanes. He also denies the Makabayan Bloc has already thrown its support behind a presidential bet. Well, should Vice President Lenny Robredo have the left as part of her team as she makes her run for the presidency? Joining us now is political analyst Ramon Castible. He is chairman of the Consortium on Electoral Reform. Ramon, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Good evening.
Right. So, Ramon, first question is, what do you make of what is happening right now? This whole discussion, should Nery be included? Should Nery be excluded from the slate? Should the vice president even form an alliance with the Makabayan Bloc? What are your thoughts on that, Ramon?
Well, that's the problem of negotiations. This thing should not have been discussed in public. And I don't think... the problem is with the people. We know their positions before. That's why they had to negotiate. But the fact that it became public while there is still negotiations going on means that the problems are not bridgeable. They could not agree. And it will be up to the leading candidate, that's Vice President Lenny Robredo, to take a hand, not in the negotiations itself directly, but in trying to tell the negotiators not to do it in public.
Mm. So let's talk about that. As you said, you know, we've known their position long before she declared, long before this season even began, Mon. But what does this tell you, this episode? What does this tell you about the leadership of Vice President Lenny Robredo and also the leadership of the Makabayan Bloc?
Well, I don't think she did anything wrong, you know, but she should have told all these parties that any differences should be done in the negotiations, not in public. The public is not part of the negotiators in the first place, and it adds complexity to what is already a difficult negotiation.
The discussion that is unfolding before the public, do you think that that's in a way eroding whatever unified opposition or talks about it? The unified opposition that we have or the public is seeing right now, do you think that this is being eroded by the discussion on Vice President Lenny Robredo and possible alliance with Makabayan Bloc? Mon, what do you think about that?
I don't think it has made much difference in as far as the election campaign is concerned, because in the first place, there's no presentation yet to the public as one bloc. Mm. And that type of problems should have been within the negotiating people. Mm. However, if it comes out later during the campaign that the people who are negotiating should try to do it in public, I mean, it would be part of the campaign already. And that would be a negative impact, because it means that those who are saying that they are opposition are not actually opposition that are united against the administration, that they have their own positions. And that becomes a problem, because what is otherwise a unified platform and position would become disunited.
What are your thoughts on former Senator Antonio Trillanes and his attacks on the Makabayan Bloc?
Well, as I've said, he should have done it during the negotiations and within the negotiation process. He should not have done it in public. He's not campaigning. It's not yet campaign time. And it only adds fodder to whatever is the problematic campaign later of not only the one he's attacking, but even his own. Because voters would really judge him as somebody who is not really that interested in campaigning on the basis of people's interest. The projection there would be self-interest.
You know, Mon, when you talk to, when you listen to the camp of Vice President Lenny Robredo, their HQ says they're still deliberating on it. But, you know, there's also the whole issue of distrust here. So what do you think is happening? Is it actual deliberations that are going on, or is it really about distrust?
Well, if what I've heard is true, there's no decision yet on the final list. I think there is one or two slots left that has to be filled up. And that means that the process is not yet complete. And all those involved who are still negotiating should have kept everything under wraps, because it's negotiation, it's not campaign.
Mm. Do you feel, though, that Senator Chilianes is actually part of the negotiating team? Because something doesn't add up here. in 2019, when Attorney Colmenares ran for the Senate, he wasn't part of Ocho Derecho. Neither was Senator Antonio Trillanes. That whole team was really brought together by the Liberal Party.
Well, I don't know who the actual negotiators are. It may not even be the candidates. Usually, the ones who actually are talking to each other are, of course, people who have the authority to do so. The problem is the candidates should have gotten themselves into a situation where they cannot later be taken account of for whatever they're saying.
Hmm.
They should have waited for the negotiations to complete.
Do you think it's still possible, Mon, that the two sides can talk above the noise and eventually find some common ground here?
Well, as long as they're talking, it's still negotiations. The moment they stop, then that's the end of it. The problem here is, while they're talking, they're already campaigning. That's already campaign when you start attacking opponents. That's why it adds complexity to what is already a complicated situation.
Okay. What do you make of the slate that the vice president came out with?
Well, it is her prerogative, actually, because as the leading candidate, and considering that there is no party or Liberal Party decision on how to do it, she would be in a position to decide on the final list of candidates.
Hmm. Do you believe that, okay, we were talking about distrust a while ago, Mon, and when you talk about distrust, you know, there's plenty to go around, right? I mean, in the slate itself, you have the Liberal Party, who has been accused as, instrumental in stealing the presidency from presidential candidate Fernando Poe Jr. before. You have Senator Trillanes, a known mutineer. You also have former Vice President Jojo Binay, who's still facing plunder charges. So if there's distrust, you know, even Vice President Lenny Robredo said, walang perpekto sa kanila. So why would you then not have the same kind of understanding when it comes to Attorney Nery Colmenares, Sunny Matula, and all those they're considering?
Actually, that's the question. Why would you put a block when you are negotiating? Negotiation is supposed to actually try to get you together. And if at the start of the negotiation, you put up a block, you're not negotiating. It has a semblance of take it or leave it.
Mm. So where do they go from here? What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, I think the process ends with Vice President Lenny, because she's the one to finalize the list of senatorial candidates. And I don't think anybody would disagree with that. So what I'm waiting for is after the whole process of talking, she makes a decision. But it should be prompt already before any bad blood occurs. The key there is to be sure to balance out things. And I think that is what she's doing.
But should she make that prompt decision without the bloc abandoning Manila Mayor Isko Moreno and any talks that they're having with other candidates as well?
Well, that's part of the risk, because many of these negotiated names are coming up not only in one corner, but I think three or four corners, meaning there are simultaneous negotiations going on. Well, it may not be proper in a negotiating process, but since the key is to agree on a final list, I think that's the whole point. you agree, and then take on the task of later agreeing on how to campaign. Because that would be the problem of campaigns. How do you campaign with names on so many lists?
Yeah, which we're going to talk about later on. But on a final point on Attorney Nery Colmenares, you know, I was talking to him yesterday and he said that, because I asked him point blank, why haven't they declared support for Vice President Lenny Robredo or any candidate for that matter? But some are saying when it is very clear where you should be allied with at this point, you haven't made that decision yet. Attorney Nery Colmenares said that, you know, they have yet to see the platform, the agenda of Vice President Lenny Robredo. But let me ask you, Mon, is it very clear right now to you where they should align themselves with and where they should throw their support?
Well, it would depend on what the priorities are. If they see that there is a need to replace the administration of President Duterte, they become an opposition. And since making the decision, they should make all the attempts necessary to unite the opposition. I mean, that's the steps that you have to take. And that's why I think negotiation is the current step. Mm-hmm. But the key here is not to add complexity to it, what is actually otherwise complicated situation already with so many simultaneous negotiations going on.
It's become complicated, as you said. It's become public when it shouldn't have been made public. We're here right now. To turn things around, do you think something should be done publicly as well? And if so, what is that thing that both sides should do to gain the trust of either side?
First of all, they should keep silent. You don't add trust, or you cannot separate trust from the question of silence, because negotiations are supposed to be done privately between the parties concerned. You don't negotiate in front of the public, in front of political enemies later. That's not the way to do it. So the first thing, well, the second there is you should be aware of the basis for unity and negotiate in accordance with that basis. Because if you don't have that clear basis, you would have a problem, basically, in taking up positions in the negotiations.
All right. You mentioned a while ago the several names appearing on several slates. I mean, we've talked about electoral reforms for, I don't know, two decades almost, Mon. What does this tell you now about how far we've come, or have we budged at all towards the goal of having legitimate, comprehensive electoral reforms here in the country, Mon?
Well, actually, that's already a sign that the reforms need to be done as a first step, actually, in addressing what all the problems in the electoral process. And the key there, of course, is to strengthen the political party system. Let the party be the determinant in all the negotiations, in the campaign, in actually taking up logistical and material support for candidates. In mature democracies, in Europe and in the US, the role of the party is paramount. That's why they can control the candidates. The candidates don't control the party. In the Philippines, it's the other way around. The candidates declare even without parties. And they make the decision on their own. Just like the present negotiation, the ones negotiating here now are not the parties. The negotiators are the candidates. And that is a big problem. Because if you're negotiating, you should have principles, you have programs, not only simply yourself. Actually, what happened is against that principle.
Yeah, and talking about those principles, what should be the guiding principles as the Makabayan Bloc and Vice President Lenny Robredo try to resolve this mess and talk towards having a unified opposition?
Of course, the major or the number one concern is that you have a unity in purpose, meaning the reason why you are talking in the first place is that you need to be in unity as opposition against the present administration. That's normal. But you shouldn't have the debate in front of the public.
Yeah.
Negotiations are supposed to be in private.
But since it's there already, and you're saying that there has to be unity and purpose, having that in mind, should the Makabayan Bloc now just unilaterally abandon all talks, withdraw support from Mayor Isko Moreno, and declare their support for the vice president if this is what they want?
I think that's the sticking point from what I know of the negotiations so far. The Makabayan Bloc has not declared a presidential candidate.
Should they? Should they at this point?
Well, when you start negotiating, you start with the principal. And the principal here, of course, is the presidential candidate. If you don't agree on a common presidential candidate, you don't have anything to negotiate with.
So I ask you the question again. What do you think? Should they, at this point, talking about the Makabayan Bloc, should they abandon all talks that they're having with other contenders, withdraw support from Manila Mayor Isko Moreno if they have indeed supported him, and just focus on the vice president? What do you think?
Well, they should make a decision, I think, during this negotiation on who their principal candidates are. And based on that decision, they should make the necessary steps. If it means leaving one candidate, presidential candidate, aside in favor of another one, that's part of the negotiation.
All right. Moving on to the campaign trail now. Campaign season hasn't even started yet. We all know that. But what to you will be the definitive issues that will shape this election season, Mon?
Well, without the campaign issues, it's easy to say that the pandemic and the economic crisis would be at the heart of all the issues that are expected for the candidates to talk about. And I'm waiting actually for their positions on these two issues. And I think the negotiation themselves, I think, has some bearing on these issues. Because the way the situation has developed, we still have pandemia, and the economic crisis, as Neda said, would be 10 years.
Yeah.
That would be beyond the term of the 6-year term of the president.
Mm.
It means people would really want to have somebody leading them who are capable and actually can negotiate. Negotiation capability, I think, is part of the requirements, because you cannot handle the pandemic and the economic crisis without talking even to your political enemies, because the issue is not a partisan issue.
Mm. All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Very interesting discussion we just had there, Mon Casiple, of the Consortium of Electoral Reforms. He's the chairman of that group. Thank you so much, Mon, for joining us this afternoon. Thanks. Nice to see you again. Take care and you keep safe.
Okay. Okay.
Right. We have this just in. The Philippines is set to expand its new pandemic alert level system outside Metro Manila. Beginning tomorrow, Wednesday, until the end of the month, the provinces of Negros Oriental and Davao Occidental will be placed under Alert Level 4. And just like Metro Manila, Alert Level 3 will take effect in its surrounding provinces, Cavite, Laguna, and Rizal. Davao City, Davao del Norte, and Siquijor will also implement Alert Level 3. Meanwhile, Alert Level 2 will be in place over Cebu City and several areas in Calabarzon, eastern Visayas, and the Davao region. Going to take another break. Still ahead, former U.S. President Donald Trump sues the congressional panel investigating the Capitol Hill riot. Stateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. Back with more news, the chairman of the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee bears the panel's initial findings on government's allegedly anomalous pandemic supply deals. The initial report cites the alleged violations of several government officials and executives of formerly pharmaceuticals. These include former budget official Lloyd Christopher Lau and overall deputy ombudsman Warren Leong. The panel also said former presidential advisor Michael Yang and officials of formerly violated the Bayanihan to Heal as One Act. Senator Richard Gordon vows to push through with the investigation despite attempts by no less than President Duterte himself to derail the proceedings.
Ito po ay panimula pa lamang, hindi katapusan po ito. Ito po lang po ang unang yugto ng pagpapanagot ng mga taong nangahas, magnakaw sa kaban ng bayan habang nasa gitna tayo ng karimlan ng pandemic. Sinusubukan po nila ngayon pagtakpan ang kanilang karumalduman ng mga krimen.
The Justice Department has filed drug possession charges against Julian Ongpin, son of prominent businessman Roberto Ongpin. Let's get details now from Mike Navallo. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. The DOJ has filed a non-bailable criminal case of possession of dangerous drugs against Julian Ongpin at the San Fernando City La Union Regional Trial Court today, the Office of the Prosecutor General said. No audit branch yet, and the case will still be allowed. The prosecutor, Honey Delgado, spokesperson of the Office of the Prosecutor General, said there's also no arrest warrant yet. The precautionary hold departure in issued by the judge on October 8th is validly tested by the court. A case deal prevents a person suspected of committing a crime from leaving the country. On Monday, the DOJ indicted a bill, client of one of the country's business sites, for violation of Section 11 of the Republic Act 1995, or the Comprehensive Dangerous Drugs Act, after 12 grams of cocaine were recovered from the hotel room he was staying in. Under the law, possession of 10 grams of cocaine or more.
Sorry to do this, but your audio is coming in choppy. We're going to try and get you back before the program ends. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for joining us. Mike Navallo there joining us online. We're trying to get him back. In the meantime, we move on. In world news, former U.S. President Donald Trump sues the Congressional Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol Hill riots in a lawsuit filed Monday. Trump's camp argues the panel's request for the ex-president's White House records violate executive privilege. Committee members Liz Cheney and Benny Thompson call Trump's move an attempt to delay and obstruct their probe. The House of Representatives impeached Trump earlier this year on accusations he encouraged his supporters to storm Congress and prevent the certification of President Joe Biden's election victory. More than 600 people have been charged over the incident, where at least one person died. In business, a new survey shows some employees in the Philippines could get an average pay raise of 5.6% next year as the economy rebounds from the pandemic. Willis Towers Watson said local companies are looking to hike salaries amid challenges in hiring new workers and retaining the current workforce. Next year's projected pay raise make that pay rise will be higher than the average 5% salary increase implemented this year. It's also above the 5.3% average. Average salary hike projected by companies in the Asia Pacific for 2022. Medical technology firms are seen to give the biggest pay hike next year, followed by construction, property, and engineering companies. Tech giant Apple unveils a slew of new products on Tuesday. Apple introduced two new MacBooks that run on more powerful in-house chips. The upgrade marks another step away from Apple's previous chip supplier, Intel. The new models cost around $1,999 to $6,099, or around $102,300. 311,400 pesos. Apple also introduced several music-related products. They announced a $5 a month version of its streaming music service. The tech giant also released a third generation of its AirPods worth $179 or more than 9,000 pesos. And we have him back on the line, Mike Navarro, to talk to us about the non-bailable drug charges against Julian Ong Pin. Mike, over to you.
Carmina, the DOJ has filed a non-bailable criminal case of possession of dangerous drugs against Julian Ong Pin at the San Fernando City La Union Regional Trial Court today. That's according to the Office of the Prosecutor General. There's no RTC branch yet, as the case will still be raffled, and there's also no arrest warrant yet. However, there is an existing precautionary hold departure order against Ong Pin issued by a La Union judge on October 8, which is valid until lifted by the court. A PHDO prevents a person suspected of committing a crime from leaving the country. On Monday, the DOJ indicted Ong Pin, scion of one of the country's richest tycoons, for violation of Section 11 of the Public Act 9165 or the Comprehensive Dangerous Drugs Act after 12 grams of cocaine were recovered from the hostel room he was staying in. Under the law, possession of 10 grams of cocaine or more is punishable by life imprisonment and a fine ranging from 500,000 to 10 million pesos. He is also being investigated over the death of his girlfriend, artist Bree Honson, as he was the last person seen with Honson when her lifeless body was found on September 18. He claimed she committed suicide, but Honson's family is contesting the claim. Police said Honson died of asphyxia and tested positive for cocaine. The NBI is also conducting his probe. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Mike Navarro there joining us on the line. Take care, Mike. You keep safe. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines Podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. We now turn you over to the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee hearing on government's pandemic supply.